Blog Talk Radio.
Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Welcome to Don't Give Up Radio. It is a pleasure to be back with you another weekend so that we can really sit back and learn and be inspired and encouraged. Yes, indeed. Every week we want to inspire you with something new and something great and something wonderful. And so tonight, if you ever experience bad memories, memories from your past, memories that you just feel like you cannot shake, you just cannot, no matter what you do, get them out of your mind, it impacts how you feel about people, family, work, relationships, and it's hindering you. And you've tried everything, but you just cannot manage to get your mind clear. Tonight, we're going to delve into exactly how you can release those memories of the past that have been holding you back and holding you down. We have a wonderful licensed professional counselor, certified life coach, Frank Healy, who's here with us. And it's going to be wonderful to just hear how he was able to find his path to this particular calling. You'll never, ever guess, but God is so good that he can use the difficulties of our past to bring us to a place where we can be of help and blessing to other people. So, Frank, thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. Well, I want to, you know, set it up just a little bit. I get a lot of requests in for the show, and I always go through a process where I qualify the guests and just kind of really see what their specialty is and what it is that they bring to the table. And one of the things that was amazing and caught my eye about your particular story is a specific diagnosis that you have. And I knew about it only because of a television show that I was addicted to years ago called House. I don't know if you're familiar with it. But,
yes, I'm familiar.
What's amazing about House is that he had all of these scenarios, all these odd scenario, rare disease type situations where he had to figure it out. And one of the shows was about a woman who had only been able to retain the worst memories of her life. And so every relationship of hers was destroyed, and she basically isolated herself from everyone because it seemed that she was only able to retain and recall those things that were negative and holding her back. And once they gave the diagnosis, she realized that there was actually more power in her hands and her ability to actually also remember the beautiful things, the great things. And I don't know what it is about our mindset in general, with disease or no disease. We tend to harp on the things that are negative as opposed to the things that are positive. So I wanted you to take a moment and speak with us regarding your disease and what you have. But let's go back before we just jump right in and tell the audience about it. You first noticed it when you were about 6 years old. Explain to us, what were you experiencing?
Okay, well, one week when I was actually not quite 6 years old, and for the record, I'm 56 now, so that was 50 years ago, I was homesick from kindergarten for a week, and my uncle down the street had just given me a calendar for that year, 1966. So, bored at home and looking at it, I was fascinated by the blocks and the dates on it, and I connected every date with what would be on primetime TV that night. So by the end of the week, being homesick from school, I realized that I had the entire year memorized. I knew what day of the week every date was or was going to fall on that year. And a few months later, I was talking to a man about all the about what I did on a particular date, August 4th. And he said, "And you know a lot of dates and what you did. Do you realize I don't know that, and most people don't know what they did on most days?" And that's when I realized I was different from other people, that I had this very good autobiographical memory.
Right, and that's the first thing. People might just think that you had some type of photographic memory and you were just capturing things, but it was actually more than that. You have the ability to kind of remember everything, every detail, every conversation, every moment. Life is more vivid for you in that sense. As you start to get older and you dealt with your family, was there any type of, did you find it to now start to be a negative or a drawback in any way?
Well, my family supported me because in my family, we really valued intelligence, and so they liked that I could do that, except sometimes it seems like whenever I did forget something, they, you know, I would hear, "Oh, you didn't remember what time that event was supposed to be, but you remember things that happened 5 years ago."
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, and I also realized that although I remember all the good, happy times, I also remembered all the bad days at school and when I grew up, bad days at work, romantic breakups and social slights, as well as all the good things. And I tended to remember them with the same emotional intensity as if they were happening right now, for better or for worse.
Absolutely. One of the things we absolutely know about the brain now is that our brain really can't make a distinction between what is really happening or what we imagine to happen. And if we are recounting things as if they are happening right now, the brain is experiencing it, to my understanding, as reliving it over and over again. Is that correct?
Well, that's correct. You keep thinking about a past event vividly, you experience the same feelings as if it were happening right now, because to that level, your brain can't tell the difference emotionally. So you just keep on feeling the same thing. And one of my books, Heal Your Memories, Change Your Life, is for anybody who has traumatic, upsetting memories, how even though you'll probably always remember the event, you can let go of the unhappy feelings associated with it.
But in this case, you found that you were not able to do that. And I'm wondering that as you get into your preteen years, where preteens are difficult in general, right?
Yes, they are.
what were specific difficulties you were facing as you had this gift, which I don't know if you called it a gift at that time, but eventually you learned to embrace it as a gift. But what were some of the difficulties as you went into your preteen years?
Well, some of the difficulties were that there would be so much going on in my head with all these facts and figures and playing mental gymnastics as well as playing events over, that it was hard to focus on anything external, and hence in my preteen years, I was not a very sociable kid. I was a pretty quiet kid. And I think it got to where by the end of seventh grade, I decided that the only way that I could probably have the esteem of other kids was to flaunt how smart I was. And that was what I depended on for self-worth. Perhaps surprisingly, in a lot of ways it worked. Kids in school really respected me, that I was a great student and smart, and, you know, it worked. But
that's absolutely fabulous that you were able to manage it and have it work for you for the most part. And even through the difficult years that many of us face. And before you talk about the moment where you begin your relationship with the Lord, and I think it's great that it happened in the teen years, because that's those years that they say that it can't happen, but it did happen for you. And I wanted to know, was there any point where you felt like this was a thorn in the flesh, for the lack of a better word, or that it caused crisis in your life and you just wanted to kind of throw it away and tuck it in a hole somewhere and wish that it didn't exist?
Well, it got to be where when I hit high school, the work was more demanding, and my sometimes having trouble paying attention to things right in front of me, my grades started to go down a little bit. And to me, that was a really real identity crisis. And so this, you know, knowing all the dates, but sometimes not being able to pay attention as well as was demanded in school, became kind of a crisis. And sometimes, I'll admit, I had the feeling in some of those years as I wish I could stop thinking so much. And so I became kind of like the old Billy Joel song, an angry young man around age 15. I was just always angry about school, angry about other kids, really angry about everything, and, you know, even wishing I could just turn off my mind sometimes.
How was that anger presented itself? Like, if I was looking at you, if I was in your family, around you, how would I have seen that anger play out?
Well, it would have played out that I was never that good with concealing my feelings, and I would get snappy sometimes, or else I'd just sit and stew, and it would show on my face, and even in some of my body language, it would show.
Now, Frank, I wanted to go back and touch on something that you grazed over, but I know for many of our listeners, they can relate to a point in their life that they thought of committing suicide. They thought of throwing in the towel on life and saying, you know, it's just not worth it. Can you go back to that period of time in your life for us and just explain what was it that was going on in your world, the way you perceived life as happening to you or around you, that made you think of suicide as an option?
I mean, I felt like my worth as a person was taken because I was no longer the top student. That was a part of it, and I perceived my environment as hostile. I think teenagers go through a phase where they think they don't have the esteem of anyone. My family was always great, but we had some misunderstandings at that point. And so, but before I came to the Lord, I think there was a pride factor too. Like suicide would be the ultimate giving up and the ultimate losing. So I never seriously considered it. And it's kind of ironic. I mentioned in one of my books, writing about that period of my life, that the only benefit seemed to be that by the end of the day, my body would feel like I just had a good workout. But I remember thinking, well, I could just do a real workout for a half hour and get that instead of being angry and aggravated all day.
So now at 16, you are introduced to the Lord. Explain how that happened.
Well, I believe that the Lord started speaking to me before I was formally introduced to him. I started to, toward the end of 10th grade, I started to have these moments where I just, maybe I just couldn't take being aggravated anymore, and where I just felt this incredible peace and felt like a connection to everything, and it seemed like everything was exactly the way it was supposed to be, and I felt very loved and connected to everything. And I was curious about that, but didn't know, really even know how to ask about it. And then some kids in school introduced me to the Lord, and I thought, you know, I just have this knowing that the Lord's speaking to me and calling me to come to him. And I became a lot more loving and caring for other people, and I kind of discovered some great truths during that period, quite precocious for a teenager, that I noticed that everybody seems to be doing the best thing that they know how to do. It's just that we all have different ideas, and by recognizing that, well, I'm sure the Lord was working to help me recognize that, because it started making me incredibly compassionate and caring and not so self-absorbed as I had been as a preteen and as a young teenager. So, and there's always been, I mean, sure, I still have tough days, but that sense of peace with the Lord has stayed with me all these 40 years now, and I never lose sight of it completely.
That's the key. You know, I always say on this show, Romans 10, 9, and 10, that if you confess with your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord and believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you will be saved, and that is the beginning of the relationship. And, you know, many people have different experiences when that first happens. You talk about a calm and a peace and just a unity and oneness that you felt. I had this great exhilaration where everything was more attuned and the grass was greener and the sun was brighter. But, you know, and some people can, other people would have a completely different reaction, but that is just going to show that God is so unique and so amazing in how he presents himself to each and every one of us and makes it clear that he is real and he is wonderful. When we come back, we're going to talk some more about Frank's development as he moved on and how he was able to find out the name of his special gift when we return.
I'm
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
And we are back with Frank Healy, and he is here today to talk with us as licensed life coach, certified counselor, and talking to us about a very special gift that some people in the medical field might have a diagnosis for, a name for, but he looks at it as a special gift. Frank, you decided to be a part of a study that helped put a name on what you have. And how did you find out about the study, and what led you to go ahead and be a part of it?
Well, it started, in 2008, I had already put my first book out, Living with a Phenomenal Memory, which is my best description of how I do it all. And then I watched on 2020, on May 9th, 2008, they had featured the study, and this lady at the University of California, and this lady they'd been studying for 5 years. And at the end, they said, if you think you have this kind of memory, please write to us. So I sent them a copy of my book and a letter, and they called me about 2 months later. And then first it was a series of phone quizzes. They'd call me and they'd ask me, either they'd throw out a date like March 24th, 1989, and I would say, that was a Friday and it was the day of the Exxon Valdez oil spill and it was Good Friday. Or they might say, on what date did you wear a tie with lobsters to work to amuse your coworkers? I'd say, oh, yes. Friday, January 20th, 2006, and same day as the first High School Musical release. And after four quizzes, they told me they'd like me to go over there and be studied more intensely for a day or two. So on Wednesday, February 9th, 2011, I was there. My wife and I flew out, and she went to Disneyland for the day, and they gave me all kinds of quizzes from journals I had sent them and things on computer about what happened on what dates. And, you know, by the middle of the day, they told me, you definitely have this hyperthymesia, which they coined as a popular term, highly superior autobiographical memory.
I see. So now you had a name for it. And what's the statistic on that in terms of how many people actually have this ability?
Well, the University of California has now discovered 60-something. I was number 12 that they had studied, and they found a lot more people since then.
That's a very small number.
Yes, it's a small number of the population, and they've discovered that, I mean, now some people in England and Australia are starting to come forth that they have it, but no matter how you look at it. And one of the things they did, in addition to the verbal tests, they gave me an MRI, and they found that mine and the brains of everyone they had studied so far are about parts of the frontal lobes where we do our thinking are about almost twice the size of the average person's.
So now, once you have this information in tow, and you already started writing books, what led you to pursue the path of exploring this more in your writings and even becoming a coach to help people who don't necessarily have the disease but have the same difficulty of being able to manage memories from their past?
Well, For years and years, I was always drawn to the counseling profession, and I prayed to the Lord, are you sure this is what you want me to do, or do you maybe more something with numbers, or since I remember dates? But he kept leading me toward the counseling and coaching professions, and when this study came up, I was actually kind of relieved because now the Lord's revealing to me why he gave me this gift of hyperthymesia. And by the way, I have never looked at it as a disease. It's but hyperthymesia. And I thought, so now I know why. So I can use the idea of letting go of the painful feelings and learning lessons from memories and letting the Lord empower you. This is the this is what it's leading into. And then in 2012, I was at a book marketing conference, and a couple people came up with the idea that even my last name, Healy, it's like you ought to call yourself Frank Healy, the memory healer. So, and
I like it.
Yeah, so yeah, it's pretty cool. So that further made me think, since all this is coming together, this must be why the Lord wants me to write these books and coach people and things for the future. And I do have the idea that some of it I've started composing in my head, that some specifically Christian books on the subject of healing the past.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about your books when we return. And we're going to also ask you to share with us some tips for us to be able to manage how we think and to heal our memories when we return.
It's like you're looking through a telescope. You see where you're going to be. Growing, getting better. You're not the person they see. Can't be mad at the things you've been through, because they built your life.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
And we're back with Frank Healy, who's just been sharing with us the just rare gift that God has given him. He has the ability to remember the ultimate details of every single day. And it is a gift because so many of us, I mean, you know, Friday happens, you go back to work on Monday, and people say, how was your weekend? And you're like, I don't even remember. It was just a blur. And it's not because you were drinking or partying. It's just because you don't remember. And so, and at the same time, if someone, you know, says a trigger word or a smell comes across your nostrils, it takes you back to a vivid memory of your past, and it might be sad, or it might be involved with anger, or it might be elation. But our memories, a lot of times we feel like it's something outside of our control, that somehow we don't have the ability to lock things in and to release them. Now, you said something very interesting before we broke, and that was that the Lord, you found the ability to start to have peace in your thought patterns and be able to let things go. Can you break that down for yourself? Like, what did that look like for you? Was it through prayer? Was it through Bible study, meditation? What did it actually look like?
Well, it started out where, back in the teen years now, where I was so tired of feeling angry and frustrated, I thought, I'm going to kill myself if I don't get this under control. So it started out where every time I had an unwanted feeling, like anger, sadness, and anxiety was a big one, I decided to see if I created this, made myself into a laboratory kind of, and see, let's see if I can just let this go. And after a few months of that, I was becoming more peaceful, but also the Lord was drawing witnesses into my life to tell about him. And so then it became where I started releasing it all to the Lord. And so I got to a point where I can access this peace whenever I want to by offering the unwanted stuff to the Lord, and then the Spirit will guide me and give me peace. So it was, you know, and then as I read the Bible more and more, there's all kinds of references to peace, where Christ appeared to the apostles, said, "Peace be with you," and it's written about, and you know, in the letters. And so I thought, this really is. And then the idea that even though there's a lot of corruption in the world, God still has a plan that makes sense if you follow it and be with him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. Absolutely true. So now, let's talk about correlation between what you experience and how your brain works and what you find when you're counseling people who need healing from memories. First of all, what would you say is some of the most common, what is the most common area that people tend to need healing from in their memories?
Well, I think the most common is anything that really disrupted their life and was traumatic. I've counseled and I've interviewed people from my books who dealt with bullying in school or in the workplace. They dealt with physical injuries that sidelined their careers, and as well as all kinds of things that they came back from. And lots of times it's a betrayal from a friend or from a lover, and childhood abuse, and I really caution people against blaming their parents. Like, let's give mom and dad a break, because you can heal from this and it'll give you a break too. So a lot of it's just letting go, like holding on to the feelings from that. And I think that many of the reasons people hold on to unhappy feelings, such as anxiety, anger, and depression, is because they don't want to be blindsided if something that traumatic happens again. But then the problem is, then you feel that way all the time, and so, you know, it blocks your happiness and your peace and joy. So, go ahead.
I was going to ask, are most people aware of when they're doing that? Because, you know, often we hear when you put the wall up, yes, it keeps you from getting hurt, but it also keeps love from getting in. But are people even aware of when they're doing it?
Well, usually when they first come to counseling, they're not aware. They just know they don't feel very good and they can't cope with life anymore. And one of the biggest tricks is to, one of my biggest tasks is to convince them that they're doing this to themselves. And although it takes a lot to break old habits, and certainly the Lord can really help you with it. And so, you know, to be able to just let something go, because, you know, in our society, most of the goals you work towards require that you put out effort, but letting go of unhappy feelings is often not putting out effort, just letting them go. And forgiveness is a big part of that too. Like when you, in my book, Heal Your Memories, Change Your Life, I write about what forgiveness is and isn't. And sometimes, you know, when you have no more feelings about the incident, that's when you know you've forgiven them.
So that's interesting, because you also hear about the fact, and I have to ask you about this because of your gift, you know, that I can forgive, but I won't forget, right? And there is a correlation between forgiving and forgetting. So how do you come to grips with that?
Well, I think it's a big debatable question, forgiving and forgetting. I mean, when you're forgiven, you know, you might still remember the incident, but hopefully you'll have some happier memories about that person too. And if it's someone you don't see anymore, then you can just, and every time you think about them, just let it go. But if you need to forgive someone, like a family member or a coworker, someone who's still going to be in your life, then it's important to, I mean, you may never forget the incident if it was something really harsh, but forgiving means no more feelings about it. And the fewer feelings you have about something, the less likely it's going to crop up into your mind anymore. So that
yes,
can
I,
help.
I found many wives, and I would say husbands too. The difficulty is often when you're trying to work out a situation and you're functioning under forgiveness, and then you walk through the house and your something new arises, it kind of digs up the dirt of that thing that you just tried to manage or handle. So why don't we talk about practical tips that people can use to start to, take over these memories, or I don't even know if takeover is the right expression, but to be able to manage or handle these memories of the past that seem to hinder our present and our future.
Okay, well, one of the things, I would call that disempowering the memories, where you get your power back that the Lord gave you. It's like if you one exercise I have in Heal Your Memories, Change Your Life is interesting, where you pick a happy memory and an unhappy memory, and you get into a meditative state and go back and forth thinking of the two memories, but you think of a happy memory longer. And you can find that doing that, the good feelings from the happy memory will actually dissolve the unhappy feelings from the other memory. And sometimes, whether it's forgiving and letting go of something, it's true that then you can hit another trigger, as you said. And sometimes it's helpful to remind yourself that you have forgiven and then pray and lift it up to the Lord again as many times as you need to. Because, you know, I tell them, the Lord, God is always willing to take away your pain, but you have to offer it up and you have to decide not to cling to it anymore and let, and sometimes there's breathing exercises and exercises in the book to change your beliefs about, like whatever beliefs you've adopted about yourself, about life, and about people from some unhappy memories, how you can change the beliefs about it. For instance, like say you were not voted in to some social organization. Instead of thinking you're an unsocial person, you're a person that people don't like, or maybe you're a walking bad reputation. Ow, that's painful. And instead you can think, change the belief to, well, it's just those people. I'm not going to care what they think, and I'll move on to something else and maybe think about supportive people in your life more often.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, because I was just sharing with someone today, you know, there was a time in my life where I was a walking bad reputation. Now, whether it was warranted or not is completely irrelevant. The fact was, I definitely was a walking bad reputation. You know, that verse that talks about how even your neighbors despise you, you know.
Yeah,
and
that's so, right.
that can definitely build a stigma in your mindset so that long after you are no longer that person, you're no longer in that situation, you've moved on, and it's probably in the perception of the people who knew you then that you've moved on too, but you keep that shame on you. You keep the stigma on you, and so it prevents you from actually being all that you can be. I know that when I had started counseling many, many decades ago, one of the things that my counselor said at the time was, well, you don't know for sure. You're not a mind reader. You don't know what other people are thinking about you. So when those thoughts come in, just tell yourself that you don't know that it's true and ignore it, basically, was his mindset. What would you say to a person who has had this previous life and now they're something new, but they find themselves back at that high school reunion or whatever it might be, and they're afraid of falling into the same stereotype of who they used to be. What can they do to prepare against that?
Well, I think, first of all, it would be helpful to write down all the beliefs that you currently have about yourself and then create an intention that of what you're going to focus on when you go to the reunion, what you're going to do, who you're going to talk to, that goes against the idea of the bad reputation, and really reassure yourself that you are not the same person. You have had many growth experiences, and you've grown, and if you've been with the Lord, of course you've grown into the wonderful person he's making you into and still en route, but, you know, you really, I mean, I went to my last class reunion in 2013, and it was one of the most fun nights out of my entire life. They even auctioned off one of my books, and everybody wanted to talk to me. So, and I think I talked more in those 4 or 5 hours of the reunion than I did in 4 years of high school.
Absolutely. I can definitely understand how that happens. And a lot of times our perception really is not correct, and that memory that we're holding is not exactly accurate, and it's good to just release that and release the pain of it. I love the fact that you say that you can offer it up to the Lord over and over again just to ask him not to forgive you. That's not the issue, because he forgave you the first time that you
That's
asked.
Right.
The issue is about asking him for the peace that you need, so that you can relinquish and live wholly. When I say wholly, I mean fully, completely. You also mentioned meditation, and I wanted to talk to you about, ask if you could elaborate on that, because some Christians are actually afraid of the word. They have other connotations and meanings they bring into it. So can you elaborate on what you mean when you say meditate?
Well, I think with a lot of meditations, you know, like my pastor at my church, Calvary Baptist in Ocean View, New Jersey, he's not in favor of the meditations where you clear your mind because the devil could really get in there with some stuff. But I think if you pray and then you meditate, that could be good. And maybe even meditation doesn't have to be totally emptying your mind. It can be where you visualize something, and if it's along the realm of Christianity and the Lord, that would be then you could actually get the relaxation benefits, and if you do ask the Lord for some wisdom, put it out there at the start with a prayer like, Lord, help me to understand this. And in fact, I tend to think of meditation as listening to the Lord. Praying is asking, meditation's listening.
Yeah, I think that's a very good definition. I have been blessed to be a part of a course called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, and one of the things that's a part of the practice of slowing down your day and including silence into your day, and that silence is before the Lord, and you're very clear that when you're just being silent and quiet, that you're really bringing yourself into the presence of the Lord, and that's a wonderful way to do it. And it increases our ability to listen so much more when we allow silence to come in, when we unplug from the hustle and bustle of our life. And that's a lot of times why our brain, I believe, shouts at us all kinds of thoughts and memories, because we don't take the time to process things. We don't take the time to grieve. We don't take the time to be angry. We don't take the time to feel the emotions as human beings. And I think as believers, we're also plagued with this, because we have all kinds of scenarios in our head of how we should manage our emotions that aren't really biblically sound. You know, we see lots of emotions played out in the scriptures, but what the Lord said, you know, be angry, don't sin in your anger. And so acknowledge the anger, acknowledge how you're feeling, deal with it, and move on. And I think most of the time we're just so busy suppressing and denying and just moving on to the next thing that we're not really fully dealing with these emotions, and that's why these memories keep taunting us. Could I be accurate there in my personal assessment?
Yeah, so I think you just made a very good point that the memories will stick and keep gnawing at you if you haven't just acknowledged the feelings. And even as Christians, we're not perfect, and you can't do it. If you just ignore a feeling that you have, it'll just be stuffed in there. But so the first step is to acknowledge it. And then you could even say anything from, I'm angry, I'm feeling anger toward this person, or I'm feeling depressed about this, or I'm anxious about this upcoming event, so please help me to trust you more, Lord. And so acknowledging it is the first step, and that's when you can let the Lord take over and release it to him. Could you have to acknowledge the feeling first?
Take a moment for you to tell people where they can get connected with your books, with you. Can you let us know your website, your social media platform?
Okay, well, I have, my website is www.phenomenalmemory.com, and that tells you can buy my books from there. You can link on to, if you'd like some coaching, you can link on to that. And my Amazon page, where I have a video interview that I made a few months ago, and can get some information there too. And I have a Frank Healy author page on Facebook, as well as a Twitter page, so, and I'm on Google Plus, so I'm very available in social media. And my personal email, which is frank@phenomenalmemory.com, if you have a direct question you want to ask me. You can opt in on my website and get my newsletter. So there's a lot
great. So there are many ways to connect with you. Awesome, awesome. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show this evening. It has been a pleasure talking with you.
Yes, it was a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. For my listeners, I want you to continue to be your very own best hero, because the greatest hero of all said that you were worth it when he gave his life for you on the cross. Until next week, God bless.